When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
What's good, y'all, and welcome to In the Deep, a deep league-focused fantasy baseball podcast, part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. My name is Jordan White, and I'm joined here once again by my good friend and co-host, Christopher Schwebze Weber. Schwebze, how are we doing this week, buddy?
Hi, friends. I almost forgot to hi, friends. I'm doing good. I'm feeling okay. I just unlocked a new level of married, which is always fun.
And which level is that? Please, and I know, but please enlighten our listeners as to the level of married you are.
Well, we were prepping for and recording this podcast, which means I'm tethered to my computer for, like, you know, 90 minutes, 2 hours, 5 hours, however long it takes.
And too long.
My wife is out, you know, doing errands. She's at, like, Home Depot as she is the man of the house. So I wanted some TB, Taco Bell, not tuberculosis. And I got to just text my wife and go, babe, can you get me some Taco Bell? And she said yes, because being married, you have to say yes to things like that.
I mean, I don't think you have to.
Oh no, you do.
Your wife is absolutely kind.
I do. I do.
Christine is a saint.
She doesn't, but I do. But she, thankfully, she agreed to this.
Yeah, they have like the volcano sauce is back.
Yeah, I love so much that they got like Paris Hilton doing the advertisement for this.
Notably, like, whose catchphrase is "That's hot."
Yes, Paris Hilton. Paris Hilton, the Taco Bell spokesperson.
Yeah.
Do you believe that Paris Hilton has ever eaten Taco Bell in her life?
Oh, for sure. I think everyone's eaten Taco Bell.
Really? My wife hates Taco Bell. My wife would never.
But she's eaten it.
I don't think so.
How does she hate? Why does she hate it then? If she hasn't eaten it before,
the very concept is appalling to her.
I think everyone has tried Taco Bell.
I don't think she has.
That's absurd. There's no way. We need to confirm this with your wife to be sure. But I feel like, maybe aside from your wife, if someone told me that they had never had Taco Bell in their entire life, I would not trust them inherently.
Do you think, you know, rest in peace, that the Queen had eaten Taco Bell?
I feel like the Queen probably not only ate Taco Bell, I feel like the Queen probably had a favorite order at Taco Bell. I feel like the Queen probably threw back like multiple cheesy gordita crunches, dude. For sure.
I feel like she was a chalupa lass.
A chalupa lass, for sure. Oh god. The Queen of all people, what a pull. RIP. Anyways, this is a fantasy baseball podcast. we talk about deep league players. Shrubzy, we got some deep dives at the top of the show here. How about you kick it off for us with one? Oh god, you're talking about a Met, obviously. Tommy Pham.
Man, you can attest to this. Coming into the season, I was a major Tommy Pham hater.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely a tweet out there of me making some kind of like jokes about Tommy Pham when the Mets signed him and whatnot, because I didn't like his vibe. I didn't like his production, but yeah. And you were a fan of him. Like,
yeah. For what he was. Like, I thought he was going to be a good fit for the Mets.
3 months ago, between the two of us, you were the Pham guy. And I was the guy saying that he's never going to be fantasy relevant. this year because he's just never going to play. Like, not on the, not on a team with Nimmo, Marte, Canna, Darren Ruff was still a Met at this point, Vogelbach, like, they had the DH spot locked down.
Yeah.
Escobar, Beatty, like, all these guys clogging up the spots that Pham might play. Well, all it took for Pham to become relevant was for Starling Marte, Mark Canna, Eduardo Escobar, and Daniel Vogelbach to all crater at the exact same time, and for Pete Alonso to hit the IL for only the second time in his career, and for Pham, who has a 94 WRC plus in his last 1,300 plate appearances, he had to hit better than he has since 2018. Just you know, those three simple things had to happen, and Pham was in business. And
just hit like the perfect like seven leg parlay my to man, get Tommy Pham playing time.
If anyone says that they saw all of those things coming, they're a liar. But unrelated to Pham, I mentioned Alonso hitting the IL for the second time ever. Would you believe that playing for this cursed franchise, like, in the last few years, Alonso has been involved in car wrecks where his car flipped multiple times. He has the sixth most hit by pitches in baseball since he joined the league. Do you know he's only been on the IL twice in his career, and he's only missed like 20 days total?
He's quite literally built different.
It's insane.
I can say this because I've stood right next to him.
He's built like a tank, and like, he wants to be out there on the field so bad all the time. Yeah. That it has somehow negated the team-wide malaise that leads to, like, the Mets' underperformance and injuries and whatever other bad things happen to Mets players. It's just one of the reasons he's my favorite player for the last few years. Do you remember a spring training thing a few years back where Josh Reddick was running to first base and there was a wayward throw to first base and Reddick ran straight into Pete Alonso?
And got laid out.
Just completely laid out.
Yes.
Like a toddler. Like a toddler running into a brick wall. Enjoy that visual. But yeah, Tommy Pham. I bring up toddlers often on this. I feel like once a week I bring up a toddler in relation to something. Whether it's someone flailing at baseballs or running into a wall. But yeah, Tommy Pham. All of those ridiculous, unpredictable things did happen all at the same time. So here we are. Pham has now started 19 straight games, and in those 19 games, he has hit .310 with a .364 OBP and a .493 slug with two home runs, four stolen bases, and 22 runs in RBI over 19 games, which will play in pretty much any league size. Since the start of June, I've added him to everything from NL-only leagues to 12-team, three outfielder leagues. He's been that good. On top of playing every day lately, he's also been hitting fifth and sixth, which means he gets to hit after Nimmo, Lindor, Alonso, you know, the only consistent players in the Mets lineup, which is a pretty nice RBI spot. Everything he's doing has been completely backed up by the inputs. And, like, this is the rare player who is outperforming expectations by a large margin. But he's also getting unlucky. Usually dudes that overperform expectations by this much are getting lucky, but that doesn't really look like the case here. Only four qualified batters this year have a higher average exit velo than Pham. Only seven batters have a higher average exit velo on fly balls and line drives, the best kind of batted ball. He's top 25 in barrels per plate appearance and barrels per batted ball event. Top 25 in hard hit percentage, and 8th in the league in hard hit per swing. He's earned every bit of his production so far, and then some, really. Every single one of his X stats is outperforming its results-based twin. Like, he's just been unreal. Now, is it sustainable? Probably not, because he's never been this good before, and he's 35. There was a story going around in April about Pham getting new contact lenses to help offset his keratoconus.
Gesundheit.
Thank you. It's a vision problem. It's like a thinning of the cornea, and it's a problem that has been plaguing him for years. And supposedly he got his contact lenses tweaked back in April, and that has been the catalyst for his improved play. He is saying that he's never seen the ball better. And, you know, it's kind of important, a little bit important to be able to see when you're playing baseball. I think
it turns out, yes.
When you have milliseconds to react to a small pill being thrown at you, it helps to be able to see it. But the craziest thing I think about his production this year is that he is killing off-speed stuff, something that he could never really say before. Like, he's literally had 1 year in his career where he hit off-speed stuff well. Like, if and when he hits one more home run off of a breaking pitch, it would tie his career high for a season, and he's only 192 plate appearances into this season. He always hits fastballs pretty well, so if he can continue to see the ball well, see spin well, and hit breakers, he might actually be able to have a strong season even at 35 and finish out the year strong. It has to be said, when we're talking about Mets and old Mets, that if the Mets keep doing what they're doing, Pham is likely trade bait, which could either do wonders for his value or completely tank it. Like, if Pham could continue to hit like this and find himself with full-time plate appearances in, like, Houston, he would be, like, must-roster in every league. Or like, if he wound up on the Yankees. Like, because so, right now, the Yankees corner outfielders are Jake Bowers and Billy McKinney.
Billy McKinney,
yeah,
as it were.
If Pham could wind up with everyday plate appearances on one of those teams, he would suddenly be really, really interesting for fantasy. Jordan and I had a good bit of fun last night trying to figure out some good landing spots for Pham, and there's quite a few out there thanks to injuries and whatnot.
Yeah, there's enough competing teams out there that would be interested in his services. Because, like, right now, the Mets are how many games back?
A lot. Enough.
Sorry,
that I've...
Sorry to remind you, but...
Enough that I've stopped paying attention.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, if they go on a run and they start to play a bit better, then maybe there's a chance that they hang on to him, because he has been such a boon. That said, yeah, I could definitely see them using him as a trade chip.
Oh, like, if things don't improve over the next 2 weeks, I'd be stunned, absolutely stunned, if he was still on the team in August.
Yeah.
But
gosh,
there is one bit of rain on the Pham parade for me, and that is that Pham does not hit fly balls, like, ever. He never really has. It's always kind of like, that's just always been his batted ball distribution. And that's always limited his home run output. He's got, like, I think it's a career high of, like, 25 home runs in spite of pretty prodigious power. He is currently 5th percentile in the league in fly ball rate at 22%, and that is close to a career low. Thankfully, he is hitting the ball so hard that even with barely any fly balls, he's still getting enough over the fence for it to matter. But I wouldn't really count on him clearing 20 home runs this year, even if he does play every day from here on out. His batted ball profile just doesn't really support that kind of production. Can he go 15-15 or like 18-18? I think easily, with plenty of counting stats and a decent batting average to go with it. But, and like, five category production from someone that no one saw coming is a huge boon to any fantasy team. If he's still out there and you're iffy about one of your outfielders, I'd say grab him immediately. Like, I've added him to at least, I want to say 4 teams.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that he's still as available as he has been. Because, like, it's not like this is like he played a bunch for a week and then fell back off. He's been at it for 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, he's just been on.
Just regular contributor. Been in the lineup every single day. And like you said, like, that lineup spot, specifically in that lineup, like, obviously, the Mets have left things to be desired in different aspects. Like, the record's not great. Yes, aspect. I know. I know you understand this better than anyone, but that's still, like, some excellent bats right mm-hmm. ahead of him in that order. There's plenty of opportunity for RBI, for sure. But,
like,
yeah.
The playing time really started coming when Alonso got hurt. But, yep. Like, watching the games and watching him play every day and hearing the announcers, everyone's been talking about how well he's been hitting for like a couple of months now. Like, it's been so surprising, like, how well he's done, and it's been such a stark contrast to the rest of the team and how poorly a lot of the other Mets have been hitting. Like, Pham has just been standing out for a while now. Like, just, I know we say this about players pretty frequently, but like, just go take a look at their pitcher list player page or their Baseball Savant player page. He's hitting, he's just doing incredibly well.
Yeah, he's been really, really impressive. Again, I would say probably amongst the folks that we typically talk to most frequently, I was probably the highest person on Pham. Like, that's not to say that I was thinking he was going to be this good, but I thought people were sleeping on him a bit more, and I thought that there was at least some encouraging stuff to see there. So I'm glad that he is showing out, and there's actually some bright spot for you to look at as a Mets fan
right now. For another couple weeks. I'm really excited for like the 20th ranked Yankees prospect that we get back for him in a couple weeks.
Oh gosh, to be a Mets fan. I mean, I'm also struggling right now as a Brewers fan, but we can talk about that later. All right, we'll be right back with another deep dive right after this ad break.
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
All right, we're back. So since Schwibbs, you covered a hitter, I wanted to cover a pitcher this week. Pitching is like incredibly thin.
Yeah.
Right now, this is the only person that really interested me, but I do think that this is someone that could provide some decent value for the rest of the season. There are some questions involved with rostering someone like this. Basically, like, innings limits are kind of looming. Role is a bit up in the air depending on who comes off the IL and slots back into the rotation. But I really like Cutter Crawford. So
I'm so glad you're talking about Crawford, like, because Crawford is someone that you and I have both been calling out for what, weeks now.
Yeah,
maybe a
weeks.
Month.
Yeah. And this is the first time I've really, really like dug in and like tried to figure out like why is he so promising this year compared to previous years. And like, this is a rotation with a ton of like fun young arms, like Tanner Houck. Obviously, I hope he's recovering well from that facial fracture. I think he just had successful surgery on it in the past couple of days. And then Brian Bayo, also pretty exciting young pitcher there in Boston. But honestly, it feels like Crawford kind of got lost in the mix, and he might have the most interesting arsenal and most upside of that bunch. He started off the year on a really rough note. In his first start, he gave up 7 earned runs to the Pirates. But since then, he's got a 3.02 ERA over 47.2 innings pitched between starts and bulk relief appearances. There's a lot to be excited about with his repertoire, and particularly his fastball. And I realize I'm now kind of on a kick of talking about guys with really, really dope fastballs. Like, obviously, after covering Brian Wu last week, and now covering Crawford this week.
Are we sick of underwhelming fastballs finally?
We might be. Like, I feel like we went through a phase of like early in the season, we talked about guys like Josiah Gray. It's like, we should, this guy's got a really dope breaking ball and his fastball sucks. He should throw that slider like 30 to 40% of the time. And now we're like, hey, these guys have really, really good fastballs. But like, under the hood, Cutter Crawford's always had like a solid fastball from like an input perspective. So he's got like 94, 95 mile an hour velocity with really high spin and an excellent level of spin efficiency. So it makes it like a very saucy fastball. One of the best in the league. It's only given up a 162 batting average against this year, which is excellent. Even though the inputs aren't that much different in terms of like spin rate, spin efficiency, The same pitch allowed an average north of 300 last year. So what gives, like, what changed that made it so much better? Well, if you look at the heat maps on his fastball, on his four-seamer from last year, he was living, like, right in the heart of the zone all the time with the pitch. Like, bright red, just above middle. Not the best spot. Those spin-efficient fastballs, like his, find way more success when they live at the top and just above the zone. And he's improved that location this season. It's looking, like, very, very dominant. So it's very exciting to see in that regard. Also, while it might seem kind of negligible, he actually has even more ride on his fastball this season due to a slight increase in his spin rate. So he actually is just throwing a better fastball in general. There's also the changes he made to his repertoire. So at the start of the season, he was throwing a slider. It seems like he's transitioned to throwing a sweeper mid-season to neutralize right-handed hitters. It's got a 182 batting average against. He's only thrown it against right-handed hitters. It's giving up soft contact galore, so that's always awesome. I'm curious to see if there's a reason that he hasn't thrown it at all to left-handed hitters, but the usage of it is right around, just over 10% on the season, but he threw it 18.1% of the time in his last start against the White Sox, to a tune of a 35% CSW, so super encouraging numbers there. I'm curious to see if he continues that trend and continues using that pitch more. He also completely eliminated the changeup that he was throwing last year. It was his most thrown off-speed pitch last year, and leaned into a splitter that he started throwing last year very briefly. It's something that seems kind of common amongst the Red Sox staff. Like, Tanner Houck also throws a split change. The results on the pitch have been pretty meh. It's giving up a pretty decent average. I'm thinking this is mostly a location issue. He's not quite getting it down enough. It's kind of finding, like, the lower middle part of the zone too much. So I think with some better location on that, he could see better results. I think the big issue with Crawford and what kind of limits his upside is that you have guys like Tanner Houck, who obviously, like, after the facial fracture from the line drive that he took off the face, and then Chris Sale working his way back from injury, Corey Kluber, who just went on the IL, who had been bumped to the bullpen after pitching pretty poorly. These guys are eventually going to come off the IL, and it's going to cause a little bit of crowdedness in that rotation. I don't think Kluber comes back and ends up in the rotation personally, just because he has not been super good. But with Sale and Houck eventually returning, there might be an odd man out here. If the Sox decide to not do a six-man rotation, I think that Crawford deserves a spot over someone like Garrett Whitlock, who's been pretty middling in terms of results so far this year. And as I stated earlier, too, the other issue with Cutter Crawford is that there is a potential innings limit. So he only threw about 100 innings in 2022 between AAA and the majors. So we can reasonably expect that he'll be capped on how many innings he throws this year, probably around like 140-ish, 150 maybe. That said, that is another plus that he has on Garrett Whitlock, who only pitched around 80 innings last season between three levels, and he will likely be on a shorter leash. All in all, I really think that Cutter Crawford has, like, a really, really insanely good fastball, is locating it really, really well. He's got a newly emerging weapon in that sweeper to neutralize right-handed hitters, and complementing repertoire pieces that make him a valuable starting pitcher in 15-team leagues. I think he's, like, borderline 12-team rosterable and streamable for sure. I think all he's really missing is a solid piece to nail down lefties, and maybe if he starts locating that change or that splitter a little bit better, he could see some better results.
Nice. You know, I'm a big fan of Cutter Crawford. I've got him in at least a couple leagues myself. I'm really excited to see what he can do going forward.
Yeah, he's been, I mean, okay, so two things that I forgot to mention too. He's got a cutter and a curveball that he throws. Those are his, like, second and third most used pitches. The cutter was supposed to be the thing that he threw against left-handed hitters to challenge them. It's got like a 370 batting average against this year. It's not been good. He hasn't located it super well. I don't know if that is the answer against lefties. The curveball, on the other hand, I think, like, while it has given up a higher batting average than he probably would like, it is a very, very reliable pitch to throw strikes. I think he's got like a 68 or 69% strike percentage on the pitch. So his curveball, it's not really a swing and miss pitch. It's more of a called strike, like dump it in there for a strike pitch, is good to have. I'm just curious if he's going to, I really want to see if he starts leaning into using that sweeper against lefties in any capacity, because he hasn't thrown a single one yet.
Well, now I could be wrong here, but I feel like I recall reading that you don't want to throw, like sliders are kind of okay opposite handed, but sure, you don't really want to throw sweepers opposite handed. Maybe I've got that wrong, but I feel like I read that at some point.
I feel like I don't know who that was from. Was that who wrote the article for on sweepers?
We'll have to look into it. We don't have the time to go.
Not being company men right now. But yeah, he needs something to neutralize left-handed hitters because he's kind of getting crushed.
Do you think that he throws the cutter out of like a sense of duty because of his name?
Probably. Also, that's like one of the only Easter eggs on the entire pitcher list site. Is if you go to Cutter Crawford's pitcher list page, it's listed as a cutter with a K instead of a C.
What do you think he would do if he wasn't a pitcher? Like, if he wasn't a Major League Baseball player with a name like Cutter Crawford, what can you do?
Professional wrestler? Lumberjack?
Ooh, that's good.
I think those would be good ones. What else? Landscape architect? Cutting grass?
Lumberjack, yeah.
Something like that. He'd be a groundskeeper. That's what he would be.
Perfect. No notes.
Cool. All right. We're going to get to our league-wide roundup right after another ad break. All right. And we are back. Schwebzy, let's kick it off with the NL East. I'm going to kick it off with Colby Allard. Just came back for start of the year for Atlanta, went and struck out 8. Inexplicably.
The Braves can't keep getting away with this. I'm so sick of it.
I don't get it, man. Baseball is very dumb sometimes.
Dude, if you look at the pitch chart, where he threw his pitches, like the center square, the down the middle square, yes, is like empty. He didn't throw like a single pitch down the middle, and it's just infuriating. It's like, come on,
He located his pitches exceptionally well, is what that means. So he didn't make any mistakes. It was also against Minnesota. Minnesota, as of late, has been a very, very, very strikeout prone team. Like I think they probably have one of the highest strikeout rates as a team in the entire league over the past month. But yeah, he did locate his pitch as well, and that's where you're going to see him be successful. He's not going to overpower people by any means. He does see the Guardians next, which is probably a fine stream.
He got 6 whiffs on a 90 mile an hour fastball.
Yeah, he just elevated it well.
That's he did. He located well. You know, curveballs down, fastballs up. Like, his zone rate was really low, but it's a little bit deceiving because so many of his pitches were, like, just outside the zone, which are enticing pitches to swing at.
Exactly. All right, let's go to Miami. Oh, yeah. Let's go to Miami, and Brian Hoeing. Results have been good.
Incredible.
I just...
Vargas rule it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, I really don't see anything here that makes me think, yes, this is sustainable. And also, like, I mean, he's making his fourth or fifth start, I can't remember which, of the season against Atlanta today. I wouldn't do that.
Oh, absolutely not. No way. Not even with the Vargas rule.
Like maybe in a favorable situation. I think I looked at it on Baseball Savant, and he's got Atlanta has like a 4.15 xWOBA against Hoeing as a collective in their careers.
This was pointed out to me by a friend of mine because I kept using the term Toby without explaining what it is. For those who are unaware, the Vargas rule is named for one Jason Vargas, who was a pretty mediocre pitcher for a really long time. And he had one stretch in, I want to say it was like 2018, where he was just like unstoppable for like 2 months. And yeah. Thanks to that incredible run, we now call it a Vargas rule when a very clearly mid pitcher decides to just be really good for a while. Like think like Martin Perez last year.
Yeah, that's basically like, what this is for me.
It's going to end eventually. It's just a matter of when. And on the other side of things in Miami, Garrett Cooper has very low-key been hitting .289 for June with 5 home runs and 16 RBI, which for a corner infielder will absolutely play. You know, longtime listeners will know I'm a very big Garrett Cooper guy. I've recently added him back to a couple of my teams after previously dropping him after his miserable May. So I'm back on the Garrett Cooper bandwagon. I think he's going to go back to what he usually is, which is like a 280 hitter with decent power.
Dig it. Love it. All right, let's go to your beloved New York Mets. You get to talk about another one here.
Both beloved is doing a lot of work.
Well, there's a reason you stick around.
It's like Stockholm Syndrome.
Something like that. David Peterson.
So the line was good. He came up for a spot start, probably a spot start, and he pitched well. But I don't think I can, in good conscience, recommend adding Peterson. He was a one-pitch pitcher when he was good, and he no longer is really throwing that one pitch. The slider is the only thing that made him good in the past, and it was his fourth most thrown offering in this past start. And he did throw a couple of nasty sliders, which is encouraging. I would like to see more than a couple, but I don't really buy sustained success out of Peterson without his slider. He did, like, the interesting thing about this start is that he got 81% ground balls, and the only fly ball that he allowed was an infield fly, which is basically an automatic out. Do I think that he can suddenly turn into Brandon Webb? No, probably not. I don't think he can get, you know, 60%+ ground balls going forward. But it was something worth mentioning. It looks like there is a reworked approach going on here. I worry that means that he's giving up on the slider, at least temporarily. But I don't know. I'm not adding him anywhere, even though I am a homer.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat on that one. All right, let's go to the Phillies and talk about Brandon Marsh real quick, Schwebs.
Yeah, he's currently doing the Garrett Mitchell thing where he strikes out way too much, but he's putting up a good batting average with a sky-high BABIP. But I'm not really buying it. Also, he looks kind of icky, so I'm not adding Brandon Marsh anywhere.
I like Swamp Thing personally.
It's fun. I mean, I've expressed a love on this podcast before of a player whose last name describes them, and he does look like he has just stepped out of a marsh, so that is kind of fun.
He looks more like a Dave Swamp to me. Anyways.
My name is Swamp T. Hing.
My name is Richard Bogg, dude. Anyways. All right, let's
David,
go to the...
David S. Swamp.
David S. Swamp. What about the Washington? We got a few names for the Washington Nationals. I would say, as usual, Jamer Candelario. He's in the midst of a 6-game hitting streak. He's an 8-game on base streak. He's hit a couple of home runs in that time. He's on pace for like 160 runs plus RBIs this season. We're like literally at the halfway point this season after today's games. 260 average. Like, that's going to play in most leagues, not just deep leagues.
Yeah, no, I have really enjoyed Candelario's contributions to my TGFBI squad after re-adding him, I think, a couple of weeks ago. I forget if I had him previously.
I think you did for a bit and then dropped him for maybe... I think it was someone who got called up.
I can't remember.
But yeah.
CJ Abrams has been a weird one for me this year. I want him to be good. I want to like him. But... Man, for the June in its entirety, he has a .225 batting average, and he's not producing enough elsewhere to be that kind of batting average sink, you know? He's not walking, he's still striking out too much. The last couple of weeks have seen a little bit of it's all BABIP inflated though. I think I'm still out on CJ Abrams is what I'm getting at here. There's not enough speed, there's not enough power. And the batting average is still BABIP reliant, so I'm still out on CJ Abrams, even though it has been a solid couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm probably out on him as well. What about Luis Garcia?
Yeah, in stark contrast to CJ Abrams, the batting average for Luis Garcia is constant and consistent. So I'm a big fan of Luis Garcia as a middle infield batting average anchor, as we say literally every week on this podcast.
I was going to say death taxes Luis Garcia as the batting average floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hunter Harvey, someone that we've previously mentioned liking a decent amount. He's got
closer.
He's
got closer Hunter Harvey.
Three saves in his last five outings, which is a very good bounce back from, like, I mean, he had like a non-save situation against the Cardinals where he gave up two runs in like what was essentially garbage time. Has looked pretty decent lately. The strikeout numbers haven't really been there as much. Am I conflating that when I was looking at Matt Brash?
He's got a 28% strikeout rate on the year.
It's decent. I'm just thinking of like lately though. I can't remember. Anyways, He's been good. Regardless, three saves is something that you're absolutely going to take in like the past week and change. I know that I've been digging for them, but yeah.
Kyle
so
Finnegan's
Harvey, very good.
Kyle Finnegan's last save was on May 27th.
So pretty clearly that there is a favorite there now, and it is Hunter Harvey. Finally, after us talking about him as a potential person to look at in the preseason, I think.
Oh yeah, I've been talking about him for months now. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. All right, let's go to the NL Central now and the Cubs. Schwebzy, talk about Kyle Hendricks.
He's just doing Kyle Hendricks things. There's not a whole lot to say here. Like, he's throwing his changeup as his primary pitch. He's putting up regular, like, 30 CSW starts in spite of getting very few whiffs. I'm thinking he's back.
Yeah, I'm thinking he's back.
Maybe the most un-John Wick-like player in baseball is Kyle Hendricks, so perfect time to drop that reference. Just don't expect strikeouts.
It's like if John Wick was an accountant instead of a assassin.
That would be the most boring movie in the history of movies. just a hotel full of accountants.
Dude, a Kyle Hendricks start is one of the most boring movies in existence.
That's
but he's
true.
Been good. But he's been
that's
good.
True. What you're hoping for here is ratios and wins and quality starts. He's already turned out 3 wins in 7 starts. The ratios have been fantastic. The strikeouts are a career low, and that's a career where the strikeouts were already low. So yeah, you're not looking for strikeouts here, but he has been good.
Yeah. On the other side of the coin, there's Hayden Wesneski. He seems to just be like a bulk relief, maybe like spot start guy as of now, so I'm not really sure I'm interested in him unless the strikeouts are abundant at this point they're not. So I think I'm probably just passing on him. A stream here or there if it's like a very favorable one, but I don't think it's worth really like hanging on to him or anything like that. He's gonna float around on waiver wires for a while unless he makes a big change. So and then Schwebzy, someone that I don't know if we talked about last week.
Maybe in passing.
Mike Tauchman.
Tauchman has been quietly starting every game versus righties for the Cubs since May 21st. Were you aware of that?
I knew that he was playing a decent amount. I did not realize that he was like the lefty platoon bat.
Right, 6 weeks every day, every righty he's in there.
Damn.
And during that time, since May 21st, he has been getting on base at a 370 clip. And lately, he's been hitting leadoff on top of starting every game. So, I mean, walking at an elite rate and scoring enough runs to be a strong two-category contributor while not being a zero across the other three categories, like, that's a solid glue guy. That's the kind of guy we love around here, and yet I've been burned by Tauchman so many times that I find it hard to buy in, but he's been legitimately good for the last, like, 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, he's been pretty solid.
I've just been personally hurt too many times to add him to teams, but he has been worth an add.
Heck yeah. All right, and then Nick Madrigal. I think for me, the batting average boost is nice. He's hitting like 290 or something along those lines over the past few weeks. He's been starting pretty regularly at third base. That's really all you're getting here. The counting stats are going to be pretty minimal because of his spot in the order, and also like, while the Cubs' offense has been okay, they're not great. Like, if you're going to take a third baseman that's on the wire, I'd much rather have Chamber Candelario here. Like, that's where I'm at. But if you're looking for a guy who's like a nice batting average anchor, Madrigal could be much, much worse. So I do like that a decent amount in that regard. All right, what about Cincinnati and Will Benson, Schwebzy?
Dude, I'm so excited. I just saw my wife pull up with the Taco Bell.
Ooh.
20 minutes from now, I'm gonna be gorging myself on volcano tacos.
My man is about to just speed run through the rest of these write-ups. It's gonna be great. All right, get it going.
Hey, what for the month of June? What do you think Will Benson's WRC plus is?
He's been good. Has he been playing regularly even after all these guys with Votto being back and like?
It's 71 plate appearances.
Okay. One. 32.
190.
Oh, okay. Well,
he's been unreal in June. I keep on brushing him off because of the platoon situation and Jake Fraley's return, but yeah. He's been playing left field while Jake Fraley plays right field. And it's a little bit of a crowded team right now. There is one player too many. Mm-hmm. But the second someone like Fraley or I don't know, Steer or Senzel, if anyone gets hurt or misses any time, suddenly I'm way more interested in Benson. Benson's slash line for June is 351, 479 for the OBP, and a 614 slug.
He has
a 20% walk rate for June. He's been legitimately like incredible. It's three home runs, five stolen bases, 20 runs in RBI. Like, he's been unreal in June, and I don't think I can, like, just brush it off anymore. Like, if I'm so excited about Jose Siri week after week, I kind of have to be excited about this, right? Because it's, like,
better.
Even...
It's better?
It's better, yeah, because he takes a walk, and he doesn't strike out as much. Like, I mean... Damn. He has played the last few opportunities against righties. But I mean, this is one of those players, we talk about them all the time, guys who have platoon roles and not everyday playing time. He demands being in the lineup right now. You just have to pay attention. You have to bench him against lefties, and you even have to, you know, I'm a nighttime lineup setter, so he's not really for me, but you have to be, yeah, you know, you have to check those lineups at noon to see if he's in there, even against righties.
Love it. Yeah, I think Benson's pretty great. It'd be interesting to see if he actually gets like regular playing time. Obviously, that's a pretty unsustainable pace to keep, but even with some regression, like what is his BABIP during that time?
415, very high.
So it's high. So it's a little bit
BABIP. But he's hitting 351.
Yes.
You know, take 100 points off that BABIP, he's still hitting, you know, what, 280, 290?
Yeah.
He's been legitimately really good. This is not just luck.
Yeah, even with regression in the batting average and the walk rate,
he is a very loud tools kind of player. And he was interesting to start the season. The playing time was always going to be a question, and the strikeout rate was a question.
Yeah,
but for the season, he's got a 26% strikeout rate and a 14% walk rate. Like that will play.
Oh, 100%.
And he's gotten better as the season has gone along, which is also encouraging for a 25-year-old getting his first real major league run.
True. Yes. Yeah, definitely into Will Benson. Gosh, I wonder if he's available in my TGFBI league. I wouldn't mind having him on retainer, essentially, hoping that he gets more playing time. But let's go to Milwaukee and Joey Weimer. I'm going to talk about Joey Weimer again. I mean, the K rates are still like north of 30%. Not great, but... That being said, in the month of June, he has taken more walks. He's actually walking at a rate north of 10% in June, which is an encouraging development, as opposed to like in May, he had like a 3.4% walk rate, something like that. And the counting stats, obviously the home runs and stolen bases are going to be there. He's a power speed threat. Things are trending in a better direction for Weimer. I'm hesitant in some regards, obviously, because the average isn't necessarily going to be great, but I do still like Joey Weimer because the playing time's there and the power speed combo is very attractive. Let's go to Pittsburgh. And Trebzy, let's talk about Johan Oviedo.
I cannot quit Oviedo. It's been well established at this point. I'm 100% running him out there today, I say today meaning Saturday when this releases, against Milwaukee, and probably his next start against the Dodgers, because I personally am a sicko. It hasn't been the most difficult of schedules, but he has put up a 2.96 ERA since May 12th with nearly a strikeout per inning. Although I would avoid that Dodgers start if you're in a head-to-head matchup and the ratios are kind of up in the air. It depends on how risk-averse you are. I personally, in head-to-head matchups, I frequently go with the YOLO approach and just start everybody. But again, that's because I'm a sicko.
Every week is a fresh start. It's fine.
Yeah. I love head-to-head weeks. They're so low pressure.
Yeah. All right. What about Paul DeJong for the Cardinals, Schwebs?
At some point, Paul DeJong just became Chris Taylor. Like, if you're into a .225 batting average with pop out of your shortstop spot, DeJong might be your guy. But I don't really think at this point that there is upside beyond that anymore. And the downside is a giant crater where your batting average used to be. So I'm kind of out on DeJong personally, unless I need a desperation injury fill in.
Totally fair. Let's go to the NL West now, starting with Arizona. Talk about Alec Thomas. So he's been the everyday center fielder since getting recalled from AAA. In nine starts, he's hitting .297 with a dinger and a stolen base. He is mostly hitting near the bottom of the order, so the plate appearances will be a bit more limited, which is kind of a bummer. He's still worth a look if you need outfield depth, though. Has looked pretty solid since being recalled.
You know I'm an Alec Thomas guy. I hope he can turn his season around. And then for pitchers, there's Dre Jameson, another top Diamondbacks prospect who has been a little bit up and down this year. I've mentioned before how Jameson's best pitch is his slider and how his slider might play up in shorter stints. Well, he basically hasn't thrown his slider in his last two appearances, covering five innings, which is weird, really weird, because we frequently joke around here like, oh, if I wanted to be better, I would simply throw my best pitch more. Jameson is taking the opposite approach and not throwing it at all. Maybe he just doesn't have a feel for it right now, but his changeup has looked kind of nasty. Like, he faced Tampa Bay, who a really, really strong lineup in his last appearance, and struck out four over three scoreless innings. So maybe he lost the feel for the slider and the changeup is picking up all the slack. But regardless, I do still really like Jameson as a couple times a week bulk reliever, like once or twice through the order kind of guy. He hasn't been great this year.
No.
Like, if you zoom out, but you know, I have him in my NL only league as kind of a ratio stabilizer, just a guy to get me a few innings a week. And you know, he's been fine in that role.
Yeah, I can dig him in that sort of role, too, for sure. Let's go to Colorado. I feel like I poo-pooed Ezekiel Tovar, and then he responded, okay, so he's been entrenched in that second spot in the order, so there's value because he's going to get all of those plate appearances. He's on a 12-game hitting streak now, and it feels like it happened right after I poo-pooed him.
Dude, he just gets better every month.
Yeah. I will say that 12-game hitting streak is currently assisted by a .412 BABIP. There's going to be some regression to be had there. He does need to work on not getting caught on the base paths, though. That's like one thing that I wish he would do. Because that's obviously like getting caught. Not only you're not getting the stolen bases, but you're not scoring the runs. You're just giving up free outs. He's only been successful in one of three steal attempts during that 12 game hitting streak. So just like being better on the base paths, help contribute to that upside for run scoring as well would be good. But I don't know. He's been, like you said, he's improved steadily throughout the season. So there's got to be something to it.
He's so young still.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he's
21, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's still more of a long-term dynasty keeper play, but he's been,
oh, for sure. You
know, he's been worth rostering the last like month or so.
Oh yeah. All right, let's go to the Giants. We get a few names to cover here. Shrubsy, kick it off with Luis Matos.
Yeah, this 21-year-old he's definitely done some interesting things. He's walking and striking out at the same rate. And it's like 10%, which is dope. Like, striking out that little and walking that much as a 21-year-old. I'm just not sure if at this stage he is going to impact the ball hard enough and often enough to be anything other than a contact OBP guy.
Yeah, it has its value in certain arenas, but like a roto league? Eh? don't know. Like an OBP league, sure. But just a regular old, like, traditional roto league with average. I don't know. Again, this is similar to Tovar, probably more of like a dynasty, obviously, play. Okay, so a rookie for the Giants that has been just kind of absurd, Patrick Bailey. He's locked in as like the everyday catcher for San Francisco. He even got a day at DH yesterday, so they're putting him in the DH spot, so he gets more at bats, which is always awesome. Means more potential ABs moving forward.
9 out of 10 starts for him and 14 out of 16.
Yeah.
Which is awesome silly, for a catcher. Silly playing time for a catcher. Yeah.
Yeah. Super huge. He just continues to hit. Like, I mean, it's got like a 313 average. Something like that.
He had 2 more hits yesterday when he did DH.
Yeah. So he's been excellent so far. Schwabzi, what about Mike Yastrzemski?
He is due back from his hamstring injury any day now, I believe. And he was hitting pretty well before he went on the shelf. So if you're in need of an outfielder and someone dropped him or you dropped him, he's about ready to be re-added, I think.
Dig it. And then Alex Wood had a really excellent start against the Blue Jays. He had 5 scoreless innings with 7 strikeouts in Toronto, no less. Sorry, Toronto. I apologize to our Toronto listeners for pronouncing the second T. That's specifically for you, Justin Havelock. But Wood's home road splits are absolutely crazy this year. Like, he's got a 1.64 road ERA and his ERA at home is 7.59.
Jeez.
He's gotten blown up at home. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there's really anything to that. But it's just certainly an interesting thing to point out. But as we all know, like, I have a soft spot in my heart for Alex Wood.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like he could be a good streamer for you in certain arenas, notably not Oracle Park. Yeah, let's go to the AL and the AL East, starting with Baltimore and Aaron Hicks. So even with Jordan Westberg's call-up and Cedric Mullins' return from the IL, Hicks has been in the lineup for the last 3 games for the Orioles. They seem to want to find him at bats, even though he slowed down a bit, which is good enough for me, honestly. I think he's still worth hanging on to for a bit to see how that playing time shakes out. Like Jorge Mateo and Ramon Arias have both sat a bit more over the past few days with Westberg's call up. So I'm curious to see what happens there across the board. There's lots of implications for deep leagues. But yeah, Schwabzi, what about Ryan O'Hearn?
So just for the sake of covering everything, Hicks is sitting today.
He is sitting today. Okay.
And that's after starting like basically every game since he came over. He's only sat like 3 other times since he came to Baltimore. So let's hope this is just a routine day off and not the start of a more inconsistent playing time. And speaking of that hope, Ryan O'Hearn, if you want to hear way too many words about Ryan O'Hearn, please refer to last week's deep dive where I said, you know, more words than anyone ever wants to hear about Ryan O'Hearn. Since I talked about him, he has hit 125, which is always fun. But really, we are mainly worried about what's going to happen to his playing time once Ryan Mountcastle comes back. I think the best case scenario for Ryan O'Hearn right now is him being the strong side platoon for of a first base platoon. But like that would still leave him with enough playing time for him to be interesting. But It remains to be seen how that's going to shake out.
Fair enough. Let's go to Boston. The only person I have down here is Jaren Duran. Playing time lately has taken a nosedive. I'm just probably steering clear just because it's so inconsistent until that situation improves. He's not worth rostering, I don't think, unless the playing time is there. And then for the Yankees, Schwabzi, you have Johnny Brito.
So In his write-up of Brito, Nicholas Peter Pollock called him a coin flip, and I think that's about right. I'm not really buying Brito going forward. I don't think he's going to have a long-term role. I don't think he's going to be anything special in the starts he does get.
Fair enough. All right, let's go to the Rays then, and Jose Siri, a favorite of Schwebzi's.
Dude, before he sat yesterday, yesterday being Thursday, he had started 7 straight games, which was a career high for playing time for him. And in those 7 games, he hit 3 home runs. You know the deal with him by now. When he's starting, play him.
Simple as that. And then kind of a similar thing, Manuel Margot. The playing time is far more sporadic than Jose Siri's has been lately. If you have a daily moves league, then maybe he's worth hanging on to if the benches are deep enough, as like a stream when he's actually in the lineup. But it's just too sporadic. Like putting him into a league where you have weekly lineups is just so painful because you don't know if he's going to get 5 starts or if he's going to get 3. So I would just probably fade that for now. But the batting average floor, I think, is there for him. And he's been better in that department as of late. Let's go to the AL Central and start with the Chicago White Sox and someone who led off, I think, last night.
Yeah.
For the White Sox.
That's literally the entire reason that we're even talking about him today is because I was looking at box scores and I saw this name that I did not recognize hitting leadoff for the White Sox. He is currently fighting the corpse of Elvis Andrus for second base playing time. And he hit leadoff, and he's been like legitimately good for the last 2 weeks. He's hitting like 400 with I think 5 or 6 steals.
Did we actually say Zach Remillard's name?
I don't know. Maybe Zach Remillard.
Yes, I don't think we actually said who we were talking. I don't think we said who we were talking about.
You might be
when we
right.
introduced him. So that's what we're talking about. For those who are unaware, and you might still not know who he is, which is fair because I didn't either until I saw his name in the leadoff spot last night. So. But yeah.
And we are saying that wrong. It's Remillard.
Is it Remillard? Dang.
Remillard.
I saw the double L and I really committed.
Yeah, I thought it could Sorry, have been Zach. French. It could have been French. I don't know what to do with this, honestly, because
probably nothing for now.
He's a 29-year-old getting his first taste of the majors.
Yeah. I'm probably passing on this.
Same, but I mean, I guess it's a decent if you need a stolen base play.
Sure, yeah, I could see that. I mean, if he keeps leading off, then obviously it becomes immensely interesting. But
yeah, I think he needs to get more like rest more playing time from Elvis Andrus before he becomes interesting for me.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to a team that has many more interesting players, Detroit, and start with Matt Vierling.
Dude, I mean, longtime listeners. No, I love Matt Vierling. He's casually hitting .395 with a 14% walk rate in June and only a 16% strikeout rate. That will play. I wrote him up in the offseason. It's just been a matter of staying on the field for him this year. The tools are very loud, and the plate discipline is a lot better than you normally see for people like we consider like a toolsy work in progress. He's already matched his career high, his career total for dingers off of breaking pitches this year. So he's hitting breaking pitches better than ever. I love this. It's just a shame he hits in such a garbage ballpark for hitters.
Truly.
And I don't want to misconstrue that as saying it's a garbage ballpark because I went to Comerica and it was way nicer than I expected it to be.
Heck yeah.
It actually did pretty well on my ballpark rankings.
Nice. Once you actually visit a bunch of stadiums, you should actually write it out somewhere.
I've been keeping track, sort of. Yeah.
Nice. All right, let's go to Spencer Torkelson. He just had a really, really good series against the Rangers. He had 3 home runs, 4 runs, and 5 RBI. He's entrenched in that second spot in the lineup, so the volume and plate appearances are obviously valuable. He's got a .203 BABIP this month.
He's kind of habitually unlucky.
Yes, which at a certain point habitually turns into just it can't even really be like unlucky anymore, right?
Yeah, at some point it's just part of who he is.
Yeah, so I'm curious to see if there's gonna be any improvement there. But good series against the Rangers, maybe that'll be a nice jump start for him. He can get into a good groove here going into the month of July. And then Carey Carpenter Schwebs.
The number one most exciting thing about Carey Carpenter coming into this year was his barrel rate, and he's actually improved it this year while also upping his hard hit rate and average exit velo by huge amounts. And he's even improved his K rate by a couple of ticks, which, you know, those things don't always go hand in hand. Could be a nice stretch coming for him. similar to Veerling and Torkelson, it is a shame that the ballpark stinks to hit in.
Really? Gosh, yeah. Andy Ibañez, though, he's hit 301 in June, has been in the third spot in three of the last four games that he has started. He's also got second base, third base, and outfield eligibility, depending on your leagues. That's absolutely sick. Like, middle infield, corner infield, and outfield eligibility is awesome. He plays all over the place. He's also played a few games at first base, so there's a potential that he could get eligibility there in other leagues as well. So, I don't know. There's a lot to like about Andy Ibañez. He's looked really, really good.
See you later, Torque. It's Andy Ibañez season.
Hey, just saying.
I mean, arguably, it's better to be a slap hitter than it is a power hitter in Comerica.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then the subject of a very good piece of trivia that Trubzy posted that people were just drowning trying to answer in the Pitcherlist Discord server. The answer being Jake Rogers, who is doing his best what impression, Trubs?
I posted side by side Jake Rogers' stat line and Joey Gallo's stat line, and they are so close. They're like, Jake Rogers is doing a really strong Joey Gallo impersonation this year. Like, really? I maybe I should post this to Twitter so people can see it for themselves. But
I think you should. That seems like a good idea.
I don't. Basically, if you need home runs out of your catcher spot, like, Jake Rogers is a solid play this year. Even with what we just said about home runs being hard to come by in Comerica, Rogers has just been, like, I guess selling out for power because he's never really done this to this extent before.
Yeah, it's kind of great. All right, let's go to Kansas City. Drew Waters, Schwebze, let's start with him.
Waters is like the bargain bin Jose Siri. I don't really think you'll catch me adding Waters in any leagues this year because he's enough of a step down from Siri that the inconsistency and the wild strikeout rates become too big of a wart to ignore.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, not particularly interested in Waters myself either, so I'm probably going to pass on that too. Yeah,
and plus, he doesn't have the he has a terrible ballpark to hit in as well, and mm-hmm. he doesn't have the Tampa Bay lineup surrounding him.
Correct. All right. The one person I wanted to cover for the Royals was Daniel Lynch. He's had a pretty decent ERA over the past few weeks through 20 innings, but he's also only got 7 strikeouts over those 20 innings. That is not something that particularly interests me, especially considering he is running a BABIP of 150 over his last 3 starts. He's getting very, very lucky. He's likely to regress in a very not fun direction. I don't think I am interested in Daniel Lynch in any capacity.
I think that's the right call.
Yeah. All right, and let's finish up the AL Central with Minnesota and talk about Kenta Maeda. He's had 2 solid outings coming back from his triceps injury. He's given up 2 runs over 10 innings pitched between 2 starts. He lines up to get the Royals, who are cheeks, in his next outing, so it's probably a good stream to nab him there before he faces better lineups in both the Orioles and Mariners. So I'm fine with him as a streamer for his next start and then probably sending him back to the wire for his next 2 starts after that. And then going to the AL West to wrap things up, let's talk about Houston. Yainer Diaz, he's had tons of at-bats over the past few weeks at catcher and DH. He's hitting .313 with just a .323 BABIP and a 149 WRC plus in June. He's getting kind of unlucky BABIP wise based off of what his average is. So, I mean, that's kind of great. He's been fantastic.
Yeah. And then Chaz McCormick, I've talked about him enough times. I think he is a solid across the board contributor. I don't think he's great at any one thing, but he does enough in a solid ballpark for righties that I think he's generally worth rostering in 5 outfielder leagues. Being in the Houston lineup with a great defense most days and contributing in home runs and steals, I think he's fine. I just think he's neat.
Dig it. All right. And then going to the Angels and Mickey Moniak, he's hit leadoff in his last 3 starts. So he hasn't been playing every day, but despite that, he's got ample counting stats in June as an outfielder. He should be kind of a decent grab in like daily lineup leagues. I don't think he's been too bad. And like, obviously, if he's leading off in that lineup, he's got Trout and Ohtani right behind him. And Ohtani's been out of this world good. Same with Hunter Renfroe, who's also been awesome lately. I think I'm pretty happy with having the leadoff hitter in that lineup, regardless of who it is on my team, probably a good opportunity to score a decent amount of runs. So definitely digging that. Let's go to Oakland. And Schwibzy, you want to talk about Tony Kemp?
Dude, Tony Kemp has a 3.4% strikeout rate in June. 3.4%. He has unfortunately also ran into some atrocious BABIP luck, so he is only hitting 255 for the month. But that 255 batting average comes with a 386 OBP, two home runs and three steals, along with 12 runs. I'm not mentioning his RBI total, because it's the same as his home run total. Which means no one on he has not knocked in a single base runner that is not himself this month.
Yeah. folks, if you're not aware at this point, the Oakland A's are very bad.
And if you're not aware at this point, RBIs are largely a team context stat. Tony Kemp has started 12 of 13 games after seeing a lot of bench a few weeks ago. But this is a hot streak worth riding. He's been a four category contributor with and has a 422 OBP over the last 2 weeks. Plus, I love to I just love laughing at the that stupid RBI and home run stat because the A's are just an embarrassing team. God, imagine getting no hit perfect gamed by to Domingo Germán. Just an embarrassing franchise.
Terrible.
But yeah, and then as for pitchers, Paul Blackburn's strikeout rate continues to be up. His walk rate is down, not by that much, but still in a positive direction. And we're still generally seeing really good things out of Blackburn's kitchen sink approach. I think Blackburn still has a strong second half in store as a really solid Toby or just a solid streamer.
Absolutely dig that. And then GP Sears, his slider looked really, really good. Obviously, he was on the opposite side of that perfect game. His slider looked fantastic. He had like a 45% CSW, like 8 whiffs on it. Looked great. Changeup did not. Fastball wasn't located super well either. That said, he does get the Tigers next, and his strikeout numbers have been pretty decent. So I think if you need a stream and you're looking for some strikeouts, that might not be a bad place to look. So I'd be down for that. Going to Seattle. Matt Brash, 9 straight scoreless outings. He's got a K per 9 on the year of over 16. He's not really going to give you many save or holds, but he is absolutely disgusting and has value if you need just like filler for your relief pitcher spots. Like
just a better
the ratios
version
are
of,
elite.
A better version of Dre Jameson, like
correct.
I mentioned earlier.
Yes. He is the non-bargain bin Dre Jameson.
The rich man's Dre Jameson.
Matt Brash is Kirkland brand. Dre Jameson is Aldi brand.
The bougie Dre Jameson.
Correct. All right, let's wrap it up with Texas and Josh Spores. Is that how you say that?
Maybe.
God, I feel so bad.
S-B-O-R-Z.
Josh Spores.
Spores.
Anyways, Schwabzy.
And this is just so that the save holds people out there can't say that we neglect them. Spores has been incredible lately as the Rangers' eighth inning guy, and he has a casual 36% strikeout rate on the year. That plays, and if he happens to be still out there in your holds leagues, or even if you just need a ratio stabilizer with some strikeouts, Spores is a really good play. He's been a really great setup guy for the Rangers.
It is literally Spores.
Nice.
Nailed it. We got it.
The rare time when we YOLO a name and are actually correct.
Shocking. Blind squirrel finds a nut, broken clock, all that stuff. All right, I think that's gonna be it for this week's episode of In the Deep. Thank you all for joining us once again. We appreciate it. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we have a shared podcast account that you can catch us at. That's gonna be at In the Deep PL. You can also follow us individually at Schwebzy for Schwebzy. That's S-H-W-E-B-S-I, and then myself at Bunt Singles. And we'll be back with another episode very soon. Schwebzy, send them out.
Bye, friends.